Welcome to No Filter. Eli Zarin along with Denny McClain and Bob Page. And this is Super Bowl week, gentlemen, and there is a lot to talk about. In fact, the game itself seems to be about the least interesting. The Patriots are a 2.5-point favorite. It's pretty much a pick-em game. It's all the side stuff that's fascinating, the halftime and the Kaepernick influence and Tom Brady's a polarizing figure and the McVay versus Belichick matchup. There's a lot to talk about, but the game itself, who knows? That's why this 2-week buildup is such a pain, because you're trying to speculate what's going to happen in the game, and obviously nobody knows, right?
I don't even read the stories anymore. 1 week buildup was okay. You got 2 weeks of hype for this ballyhooed game. And by the way, fellas, it's not football season anymore. I hate the way these sports overlap now. I'm not really interested in football anymore. Season's over. Of course I'm going to watch the game. But now it's hockey season and it's basketball season. And I don't want to see the World Series played Game 7 on November 1st. I don't want the NHL playoffs on in June. And I don't want to watch the NBA Finals in July. Now we're almost at February. Well, we will be by the time the game's played, and we'll be in the month of February. Football's over, boys.
Well,
so
used
I'm
to be
tired
in.
Of the hype.
Well,
I don't read the stories.
We all love you, but no one cares about what you think and where you want the games played. I mean, nobody
cares. Nobody cares about what I think. I wouldn't be on this goddamn show to begin with.
Hey,
apparently, some people care very much what I think.
Today's all about Tom Terrific. That's what this show's all about today. Tommy Terrific. Patriots are going to win by 35 and go like hell. 2.5-point favorite.
You don't have a clue.
I'm not saying they won't,
but you don't have a clue what's going to happen. Neither does Eli.
Are you kidding me? Me?
No, you have no idea what's going to happen.
Not a clue.
Take the Patriots and just rest the rest of the
Every time
day.
You bring it up, the only bookie in history that lost every bet.
No. That's when we got ripped off.
Well, you got ripped off because you were young and stupid and got ripped off. Obviously,
everybody makes it sound like it went on for months and months. It went on for 3 weeks, for Christ's sake.
Because you lost all your money in 3 weeks, I know.
Well, I was watching some college basketball game a week or so ago with our old friend Richard Vitale on it. And toward the end of the game, Dickie V is screaming into the mic, "Take it to the bank, baby! New Orleans and New England in the Super Bowl! Take it to the bank, baby!" You know, why say something like that? You're just leaving yourself open to making a fool of yourself.
Well, you know, and I think he does often on TV, there's nobody who I like more and respect more and I think is a better person and a bigger heart than Dick Vitale.
Yeah, you're right.
A wonderful man.
But,
and yet I can't listen to him. Cannot listen to him anymore.
I know.
It's just
screaming holler.
Speaking of fools, I would rather listen to Vitale though than Dan Dockich. If Dockich gives me one more lecture after every single play in a basketball game in which something fairly obvious and simple has just occurred, I can't. I'm sure Dan Dockich is a great guy too. I can't take it.
Yeah,
I just can't take it anymore.
And listen, speaking of fools, we got Gronk again popping off.
Wait, are you changing it?
This is all a part of the miscellaneous activity that's going around every player right now. Gronk is having a press conference. They're talking about this, that, and every other thing. They're talking about point spreads or what have you. And all of a sudden, Gronk, a woman asks him a question. Good-looking woman, by the way, obviously. And Gronk says, "Well,
that's a sexist comment.
Well, get ready for
in this day and
you
age.
Think
you
that's sexist?
Denny made a
wait
comment
a minute,
like that on this
hey,
show.
Hey, wait a minute. You think that was sexist? Wait till you hear what he said." And all Gronk starts to say is, "Now listen, 6 times 9 is 54, and 9 times 6 is 54. So you got a 6 and a 9. What else do we have there? You get it?
So he's playing. He's playing." Sexual illusion, right, with 69. Who cares?
My goodness. He's referring to a mutual oral sex act? Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that what you 100%, got out of that?
100%.
And you care.
And the commissioner is ranting and raving about it.
I didn't see that. I don't read the articles, as I said.
Well, it'd probably be a good idea to read the paper once in a month. You know,
why?
The Super Bowl's this
play
weekend.
Play the goddamn game. Let's get it over with, please. Play the game.
We're trying to keep this clean. And
yes,
GD.
We are.
It is clean. I can't say GD.
You can't say GD. GD.
No,
I can't say the GD word.
You can't
no.
say GD. The F word, the S word, and the GD word are people get more upset about the GD word than the F word.
They really
so let's,
do.
Let's try and leave that out. Listen, sexist, lame, sexist, gratuitous comments are BS. And so shame on Gronk, but I don't think it's a bigger story beyond that.
Nobody said it was a big story. It's just typical of the Gronk.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants to be the center of everybody's attention, and he gets all upset when he doesn't catch a pass in the first half. So you want to make sure you throw him a couple in the second half so he doesn't take your head
off. And, of course, Denny never wanted to be the center of attention. Always just wanted to be a background character.
I wanted a ball, and I wanted to do it in 2 hours and go home.
And then there's the guy, I sent you to this story this morning, this television sportscaster in Pittsburgh who aired a video clip of Tom Brady and fonted it, name underneath, Tom Brady, known cheater. And he was fired for that. The sportscaster was fired for that.
Right.
So, you know, there's just go figure, man. Well,
Why should he not have been fired?
I'll tell you what I did. When I was at Channel 7 years ago, I was the guy who coined the term dead wings. And I used it on the air, and I would font over my shoulder 40 years ago, Boston 4, dead wings 0, something like that. So who knows what you can get away
guess
with
what?
And what you can't.
You got fired. You got fired.
Yeah, but not for that.
Okay. Well, for things like that, it was like death by a million cuts for you is what it was.
I'm going to have to split hairs on that.
What
one
was the
now?
Thing you did with Ackerman? You were sitting in the center field bleachers doing some really smarmy anti-Tiger thing.
Yeah,
yes.
You remember that?
And let me tell everybody, Al Ackerman. For those of you who don't remember Al Ackerman, who did not know who he was one of the biggest.
From Detroit, never heard of him.
He was one of the biggest horses' asses we've ever had in this town when it came to sports.
Why did he say some bad things about you?
He said a lot of bad things about everybody. He never did any work. All he did was show up at the microphone and said, "Tell me what happened." That's all he was used to say. Tell me what happened. Tell me what happened.
Mickey Stanley announced his retirement from baseball. He was involved in some electrical supply company in Dearborn, Michigan, or something like that. I take a camera crew over to interview him, and I said hello, and I said, Al couldn't make it today. I'm here. He says Al Ackerman's not welcome here, and he wouldn't be welcome in many clubhouses. I'll tell you that much. But I mean, I had a very difficult relationship with Al Ackerman, working with him for 2.5 years. He was an extremely difficult man. He was also a brilliant man, could be charming when he wanted to be, but he was not well liked. On the other hand, there have been plenty of times in my own career where I can tell you that athletes were really upset with me, and we didn't speak, and they called me out, and they said bad things about me in the paper. If you're doing your job as a reporter, that's going to happen. Did Al overdo it? Yeah, of course he did sometimes. Sure.
I was only physically threatened twice by athletes.
What happened?
Defensive back for the Lions named Charlie West.
I remember Charlie West.
I said something
on
WJZZ.
Played for the Vikings, too.
And I tell you, when he confronted me at a Lions practice, it was only he and I, like, in the side of the field, and I was scared to death. And the other one was Pat Swilling.
What was his complaint?
I forget what it was. I said. I really did. But with Pat Swilling, I said that he had lost a step. And everybody else was saying the same thing. And I came into the Lion locker room, and thankfully there are other people around. He was not happy with me at all. It was a free agent disaster signing by the Lions. But anyway, let's go back to the Brady thing about the guy getting fired at KDKA. The fact is, the Steelers to this day feel that the Patriots cheated for years and years and cost them two playoff losses. This is Joey Porter. Inside a room accessible only to Belichick and a few, well, actually, this is the story. They found a library of scouting material containing videotapes of opponent signals with detailed notes matching signals to plays for many teams going back 7 seasons. Among them were handwritten diagrams of the defensive signals of the Steelers, including the notes used in the January 2000 AFC Championship game won by the Patriots 24-17. Yet almost as quickly as the tapes and notes were found, they were destroyed on Goodell's orders. League executives stomped the tapes into pieces and shredded the papers inside a Gillette Stadium conference room. So this is Steelers linebacker Joey Porter said as much, saying what the Patriots stole 2 Super Bowls from
the three of us were talking about cheating in sports on one of the previous shows, and Danny and I specifically got into the whole thing of sign stealing in baseball. Now, I watch almost every Detroit Red Wings game, and I see a lot of basketball. They have had to put penalties in the league, at least the NHL, for diving. Guys are diving all over the ice. That's cheating. You weren't kid enough to go down. You took a dive deliberately to get a penalty called. In the NBA, flopping all over the court, an art form invented probably by the master, Bill Laimbeer, flopping everywhere. You weren't hit. You didn't have to go down. You deliberately flopped to try to draw a foul against your opponent. That's cheating.
I suppose. But the referee is supposed to call that. which shows the impossibility of refereeing a game.
They miss it. It's sure. hard. It's
they
hard.
Don't, they don't necessarily miss it. There's a lot of things that people, the people sitting in the stands and reporters and everybody think they miss. They don't miss. They've been given permission by the league, the head of the umpires or the head of the referees, they've been given permission to be flexible, for the lack of a better term, and they then are allowed to do some crazy things, and that's all this stuff starts. And the worst part about it is, once it starts, it's tough to stop, and it only gets worse. And then somebody finally gets hit with a stick, gets hit with a bat, gets hit with something, and somebody gets hurt pretty bad.
But Danny, this has always been the case. When you pitched, you actually had some of the most legendary umpires in baseball history behind home plate: Nestor Shylock and Frank Youmont, and you might see Al Barlick or Tom Gorman in All-Star games or World Series, as the case may be. Everybody's strike zone just a little bit different. The league gives umpires a little leeway now. Some guys have a tight strike zone. Some guys don't. So that's always been going on.
Strike zone's got a lot to do with who the pitcher is. If the pitcher is a successful guy, he gets more pitches than anybody else does. If he's not successful, he's going to get the same poop on home plate that everybody else gets. But if the guy wins and he consistently throws strikes and he's pitching normally two and a half hour ball games, he's going to get a lot more favor.
So you're equating the Patriots clandestinely filming other teams' practices, that the fact that the Patriots, before the 2002 Super Bowl, filmed the Rams' walkthrough, and so that they know what's being called and they recognize the plays. You're saying that's the same. That's the same as Bill Laimbeer flopping in a game. I don't think so. Different levels of cheating.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, but it's still cheating.
Come on,
it's cheating in all forms. It's always been going on. And as long as human beings are ultra competitive, especially in the professional sports area, there's going to be cheating. Patriots got caught, and they paid a steep price for it.
Historically, the Patriots have been known for it for a long time. And on top of that, I think the story just ran last weekend, whereby somebody was taping all of the walkthroughs of the teams that the New England Patriots were playing all the time, all season long. They were taping the walkthroughs. And I didn't know that was not appropriate to do.
What?
If you're in my ballpark and I want to tape you while you're working out in my ballpark, is there something wrong with that? I want to see everything you can do, don't you?
Well, it should be a closed practice,
I think there's a
closed practice should be closed
against in the NFL. But that's why they do close practices, Eli. Yeah. And that's why you'll see people put up, like, if a team is a football team is practicing behind a fenced area, they'll put up these huge green tarps so you can't see in there. I think it's more paranoia on the part of the coaches who think they might be watched than it is actuality.
Well, there's evidence against the Patriots, and they were fined for it, the cost of a draft choice, all that stuff.
Lots of evidence against it, and that's the way they've always been. I never remember them get on the field and nobody said anything bad about them. I mean, they win, and people who win all the time, for some reason, people don't like them.
Well, yeah, of
course. Guys use corked bats in baseball until they got caught. You know, it's just always been cheating.
Well, cheating with a cork bat is a nice thing, especially if it's Norman Cash and he knew how to use the cork.
He cheated by taking a table leg up to home plate one time.
That's Nolan Ryan. That's right.
Against Nolan Ryan.
but not to get too deep into this, but when you see what happened in the playoff games with, you know, the call that didn't happen, the famous one against the Saints, etc., people, and I think this happens, not to get too grand here, we think the 2016 election was rigged, that there was a conspiracy against it. And so there's conspiracy theorists are everywhere, and I think technology makes it even more so. And so just like, remember for decades and still the NBA, that the league wanted such and such to win, and you'd always say when the Pistons were in the playoffs and they lost, well, the refs are against them, or the league
beyond
wants
stupidity.
This team to win.
So beyond stupidity.
It is. But there's a lack of faith in institutions in America now, including the NFL.
Yes, I agree. But some people are more prone to, as you say, these conspiracy theories. Whenever anybody comes up to me and says something stupid about the NBA only wants New York and L.A. to win for TV ratings, I ask them one question. Do you believe that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone in assassinating John F. Kennedy. And they look at me like I'm crazy. Well, of course he didn't act alone. There was a vast conspiracy behind that. The Warren Commission and everything, nobody could find anything. But these are the same people who believe that man never walked on the moon. It was all staged for the purposes of television broadcasting.
Well, I know who did it.
You name the conspiracy, these guys got it.
I know who the partner was with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Who was that?
President Johnson.
Oh, okay.
He wanted Kennedy assassinated so he could be
Texas,
president.
Texas president. Yeah. See, we solved the problem that everybody's had all these years.
Oh, and especially I want to mention this because Eli, being Jewish, happens to be here. But you don't have to be Jewish to be utterly outraged by this. The Holocaust deniers.
Oh,
Mel Gibson's father being one of the most, the Holocaust never happened. Really?
Really? Well, yes, it never did. And Sandy Hook was a government plot also to kill all those kids.
And so down here we had Parkland, of course, in South Florida. It's all a government plot.
So are you saying then that the fact that in New Orleans the bars are going to show the 2010 game where the Saints played Indianapolis, and so are you saying that the NFL's complicity in this is just kind of going to fade away?
I'm saying what I said here a couple of weeks ago, and that is the NFL needed something like this to happen. It's unfortunate that it did. But to expand replay. So now you heard Roger Goodell talking at his State of the NFL address.
I like
what
he said.
They're going to expand that, and now they're going to be looking at pass interferences. But it's not going to be taken lightly, because if you as a coach challenge, for instance, a pass interference call, and you're wrong, you know, you lose a timeout, and I think they were going to take something else away.
Something else they were going to do, too, yeah.
Well, yeah, and I don't like Goodell. Like I said, when the whole NFL denying the CTE, I thought was so reprehensible that I could never like him or them again, but I kind of agree with what he said. He said there have been a lot of variety of proposals over the last 20 years, whether it should be expanded or not. It was a judgment call. The other complications that it was a no call. That's interesting too. And so it's
and people make mistakes, right, as Goodell said.
Officials
are human, just like
right,
the rest of us.
Not officiated
and
by
I
robots.
I believe you got to have, believe it or not, two sets of rules: one for the regular season, one for the playoffs, because you do not want these games to end the way this one ended, with so many questions regarding the ball game. And I still think what they should do is go and throw up another quarter with a game that ends in a tie in the playoffs only. Play another quarter, and whoever wins at the end of that quarter is the winner.
That should be whatever. I don't know if that's what they'll come up with, but anything is better than it is right now, which didn't give
the Chiefs a chance to get the ball. A foul in the first 2 minutes of any basketball game should be a foul in the last 2 minutes of any basketball game. You need some kind of normal standard of equanimity here.
Calling the game
the same way. You can't have two sets of rules, though.
You can't
one for overtime.
It's a non-contact sport that's full of contact. Hubie Brown once said in some post-game interview, I forget when it was, may have been back in the 70s, and I'm thinking when he says this, he goes, on every time up and down the court, there are five fouls in an NBA game.
Sure.
You can call them or not call them, depending. And so I do think you have to be a little flexible. But, you touched on balls and strikes. That's something that could be solved with an electrical system.
And it will be.
I would say, I'm guessing, 40% of pitches that are close are called wrong. And it's understandable. It's impossible to tell from where the umpire
is. It's impossible to tell until you at home, the three of us at home, watching the game with the benefit of the K-zone or whatever that you want to call that
particular
technology.
But it's a bad benefit.
That's
a lousy way to test it with a camera behind the pitcher. It doesn't give you – listen, if that camera's just on a little bit of an angle –
That's not how they do it, Denny. They do it with a computer. A computer model.
But you know what? You just can't go there. You got to have the human element in the game. It's part of the entertainment value, too. And
that's
if you're going to wipe that out, then you've wiped out a whole bunch
of people. The Saints fans are really entertained by this philosophy. They're really entertained.
One at a time.
Billy Martin. We'll never see a Billy Martin again. We'll never see a Yogi
Bear
again.
Thank goodness for that.
but it was great when he was kicking the dust up, that people loved it. You'll never have George Brett running from home plate to the dugout again.
That could happen again.
You want all that stuff.
Yeah. That was different.
Yeah, there are so many of these guys who were jerks. You know, I met a guy, I was going to say, at a party in Miami a few years
Everybody
ago.
Everybody he doesn't like is a jerk. Do you realize that?
Actually, it was a party at a science museum, to let you know what kind of crowd that would draw.
Oh, boy.
He's a young Indian guy. He's a brilliant kid. He works for a company down here, and he says they have two other competitors. They are just about there right now with taking over calls at baseball games through electronic technology. And they will do that, and we will see a time probably in the next 10 to 15, 20 years.
Well, I don't think it's going to be that long.
Umpires in baseball.
Yeah. It's not going to be that long, boys.
And in tennis, they dispute calls.
Yeah, they've already taken the guesswork out of tennis. Of
That's
course,
exactly right. Absolutely, I think it's good. I think within 3 years, they'll test it in the minor leagues for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and then boys, look out, here it comes.
Let's get back to Brady. Another topic we touched on that just flitted into the wind, like many others that come up here.
our job is to entertain people. You come up with this basic cheat sheet. Speaking of cheating, that you're looking at, and then Denny and I just go where we feel like.
To have some semblance of order and organization. Otherwise, this will really be chaotic, and people's heads will be spinning back and forth trying to figure out what the hell we're talking about. Does controversy accompany all the greats? Maybe so, because Brady has the eternal chip on his shoulder. He had it when he was a sixth-round draft pick. He had it when, the whole Deflategate thing. He has it with so many areas. And so in this game, he seems to be somebody that is he more loved? Is he more hated in America? People want to see him win. Do people want to see him lose? Is he kind of like Tiger Woods? Somebody, I think he's more lovable than Tiger Woods, who people always rooted to win. I wonder, why are you all rooting for Tiger to win? Don't you want somebody else? You don't really like the guy. He's not really nice to the media. He cheats on his wife. All they want to do is see him win because people want to be a part of history. They want to witness history. That's what that's what drives a sports fan to love the games. And I think that's why one reason Brady's incredibly popular, whether you like him, whether you think he cheats or not.
Go ahead, Bob.
He's
I'll let you go first.
He's not incredibly popular with a lot of people.
He's what?
He's not. He's, he's a polarizing figure. He's not incredibly popular. And I'll tell you something else. Since you mentioned Tiger Woods cheating on his wife, Tom Brady doesn't cheat on his. This guy is tall, handsome, attended one of the great institutions in America, the University of Michigan. He had a supermodel girlfriend before he numbed her to marry an even more amazing supermodel girlfriend. He makes $60 million a year. He lives in New York, actually, has this unbelievable penthouse apartment, and he also has some gated mansion down in Florida somewhere and probably a home in the Boston area. People are jealous. It's
you know what? You
natural.
Haven't said you haven't said one thing that I disagree with or that I don't like. The mansion, the condo.
So what's not to like about it?
I have a drink or something.
What's not to like about it?
People are okay with rich people looking like rich people. Donald Trump got elected and poor people love him. They voted for him. So they're not jealous of being rich. They think that it's verification that he's somebody special is what
they
think.
That's a different phenomenon. Let's not
I don't want to get into that, but I'm just saying.
We all agree on that.
But no, Denny and I are both saying that's not a reason not to like Brady because he has a supermodel wife. That puts him on a pedestal that people aspire.
People are jealous.
People like him. He plays with his kids. He gets lots of pictures with his kids and his wife. They're always being photographed at an event someplace around the country. They donate a lot of money to a lot of charities.
Yeah,
what is there not to like?
He's good and he's lucky. He is a lucky SOB. The Seahawks gave him a Super Bowl with that ridiculous pass in the last.
Well, that accounts for one of his rings. How about the others?
The Falcons choked him another one, although he still had to come back in the game.
But Eli, he took advantage.
And the league just put him in this one with a dumb overtime rule. That's three Super Bowls he's been handed.
Eli, he's the one that converted it to go to the Super Bowl. Every one of these games.
I'm not saying he's not the greatest, but he's a little bit lucky, too. But luck is when preparation meets opportunity. So he was there.
Vincent Lombardi.
Right.
And so now this weekend we got a bunch of gambling going on. They say $160 million is going to be bet in Vegas.
Before I finish
I find
with
that very little money.
Before
and
I finish with Brady.
In the United States, coast to coast, $6 billion they say is going to be
right,
bet.
Right. And before we get into that, real quickly.
And I never have the right side of the bet.
Brady's going to be 42 in August.
Yep.
And of course, Robert Kraft, the owner, said yesterday he's very open to extending him because he's asked the question. What if he wasn't open to extending him? He still has to say he is. You can't say I'm not going to extend Brady at the Super Bowl. So it's almost an unfair question. But he does want to.
As you know, I'm a big New York Giants guy. So why don't we trade Eli even up for Brady? I'll take that deal in a minute.
Of course.
Not you, Eli. I'm talking about Eli Manning.
All right. Denny, back to the gambling. True. And by the way, who is the – in fact, the numbers are staggering because gambling is now legal – in eight states, sports betting. But the figures are, what you said, it's going to be like 320 million bet legally, up from 160.
Right.
But illegally, 95% is illegal, going to be $6 billion. So 95% of the bets are still not going to legal gambling. And this is the next huge sea change in America, because Michigan's going to be there pretty soon. They're all going to be there pretty soon. And gambling is going to be what? A $16, $20, $30 billion
business. Listen, you're going to be able to pick up your phone very soon. I don't know if it's 6 months, a year, 5 years from now, but you're going to be able to pick up your phone and start making your bets on computer all day and all night long, and it's going to be legal. That's where this is going. It has to go. They want the tax money. Look, we just voted marijuana in Michigan. They want the tax money, and sooner or later, they're just not going to realize how much money actually comes in from the sale of this stuff.
Well, this shows the way thinking changes.
Yeah.
Marijuana in my lifetime has gone from reefer madness. It's going to lead you to attack. You're going to sexually assault women. You're going to rob banks. You're going to be a murderer. This is awful. And now, oh my goodness, now it's a medical miracle. Children don't have seizures anymore.
We were right in the '60s.
Right, and kids are flying to Colorado because it'll cure their epilepsy. So, and the same with gambling. Vegas, Sin City. It's a sin, and now everybody's embracing. And you know the hero of nationalized sports betting is who? The governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie.
He loves
fought
it.
Fought and fought. And because of his efforts, the Supreme Court overturned last May the ban against sports gambling
in all the states. That's the only thing that fat Let me say this, fellas. As everybody knows, as we all know, all the states decided years ago, why not, since people are gambling anyway, let's come up with a lottery. Let's let people gamble on a lottery, and that way we'll get a big cut of the action. First apartment I ever owned in New York City had a great young guy, a Puerto Rican American named Junior, Junior. And he did a lot of stuff in my apartment for me. We had to go to the hardware store one day and pick something up. We walk up to the corner on the way to the hardware store. He stops at one of those little newsstands that you see, usually run by Pakistanis and Indians, on every street corner in Manhattan. Well, that's just a fact. On every street corner in Manhattan. And he asks the guy for something. The guy reaches up above him, like, you know, 2 feet, and pulls something down, takes Junior's money, and gives it to him. I said, "What did you just buy? What is that?" He said, "That's a numbers card." I said, "That's a numbers card, like, you know, the mafia and illegal numbers gambling?" He said, "Well, yeah." I said, "I didn't know you could still do that. We got the state lotteries. Why would you buy a numbers card?" He says, "Because the payoff is so much higher." So we talk about legalized sports gambling. It's not going to kill bookies, because bookies will be paying out maybe a little more money. It might behoove you to bet with them.
Yeah, of course.
Did you happen to see, on Sunday I taped the CBS National News, which was before 60 Minutes, the story about the Michigan couple from Ivar.
It was on 60 Minutes. Yeah, I watched the whole thing the other night.
So here,
astounding.
Astounding. So this couple has won $26 million in a lottery called Windfall.
In Michigan, yeah.
And they're praising them for the brilliant, you know, mathematical deduction the guy made. The point is, the $26 million he got was money that other people who put money into the lottery couldn't get. It's almost like thievery. Although he did reveal the fact that it was a beatable system.
Totally legal. And then, for those of you who have not yet seen this feature on 60 Minutes, and please go wherever you have to go, YouTube or whatever, you will not believe this. This guy's a math genius in a tiny little town in Michigan, in West Michigan.
Right.
And he figured out a arithmetic way to beat the system, which he did. Then, because it wasn't, ironically, selling enough tickets, Michigan Lottery stopped doing that. But the state of Massachusetts did.
They would drive to Massachusetts.
So what happened is that this guy and his wife made the 13-hour drive one way from West Michigan to Massachusetts every week, and then 13 hours back, to buy hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of lottery tickets.
They would invest
$600,000,
and they knew exactly. They would invest $600,000 and get back. They knew they'd get back $853 or $900.
Exactly.
Right.
Or what if they invested $7,000 and got back $10,000? That's not so bad.
Anyway.
So anyway, what happened is I don't. I guess you didn't see the 60 Minutes piece.
I did.
Massachusetts Lottery thought that something's going on that's funny with this, because we get two sources. I said, two sources. What's the other source? Some math geeks at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology had figured out the same thing. And these 20-year-old kids were winning millions, and the little old retired 70-something-year-old, 80-something-year-old guy from Michigan's winning millions. It's an amazing story. But you have to see this.
Just to understand, because the reason I watched it was, well, how can you cheat at the lottery? It's all luck. This is a game called Windfall. After a certain amount of money went in and nobody won, they had a thing called a pay down or something, where then you would get, you know, for three right or four right or five right, you would get a certain payback. Right, so right. He just bought every ticket. He just bought every number there was and knew mathematically what he was going to get back. That no matter what it was, you're going to get X amount of threes, fours, and five numbers. And anyway. Gambling, and now one of the gurus of gambling, of course.
How do we get a hold of this couple in the west side of Michigan?
Evart, Michigan.
I think they're looking for a new game to play, but it hasn't come up yet, or they would have found one. Well, what the guy did is they didn't make $100 million. Yeah, they might have made
$26 million total. $26 million.
$26 million.
In all, because they also sold shares in their company to people in town to help them make money. And there are guys sitting around, you know, the coffee shop and saying, you know, I could send my kids to college on this, and we really need the money
for
that.
He and his wife ran a tiny little general store in this tiny little town in the middle of nowhere in Michigan. Every day, never closed, 7 days a week, and they did this for 19 years. You know what, pal? You deserve your 26 million. Yeah, Go have some fun now.
Right, and I agree with that. I mean, if you're working that hard trying to win, it's a great thing, but my point is, these people got to really be smart. I mean, people got to be way beyond the. They got to be way beyond the level of somebody that.
But wait a minute. Yeah. He had the concept, and it took him 10 minutes to figure it out.
That's what he said. Ten minutes.
Anyway, so as far as gambling goes, I think what's very interesting, just like with marijuana, all the people who were against it, the guys like John Boehner now are cashing in.
He's the head of some conglomerate. Right.
The last guy in the world, you'd think, and a lot of people who would never smoke it, didn't like it, or dead set against it, once legal, they're going to cash in. And so
you can go on a call on the internet with John Boehner right now and sit there all day and listen to all of his comments and all of his advice that he wants to give you, so you join and buy shares in all these different companies.
Right.
Unbecoming a former United States congressman.
Well, not
that's
necessarily.
That's so unbecoming a former United States congressman.
That's the marijuana thing. Now,
that's only marijuana.
How about the pro? How about the pro leagues?
I don't think a right winger was smoking too much marijuana, although you might think he was because of the votes that he issued in Washington. But I don't know.
Well, he was crying all the time. He's very emotional, which can do that to you.
Hey, you know, for the Detroit audience, I don't know if you saw this, but you know, Boehner came to Detroit a little while ago, and this guy is some kind of gastronome, you know, and he is so into restaurants that he refuses to ever eat a meal at any kind of a chain restaurant. So he talked to some people, went around. Neil Rubin from the Detroit News actually went over, caught him there, and interviewed him. You know what restaurant he picked in the Detroit metropolitan area? That was sui generis. In other words, one of a kind, Giannopoulos's.
Oh, okay.
In Farmington Hills. He went to Giannopoulos
because
there's no other Giannopoulos.
Little shout out to Johnny and Peter Giannopoulos.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
long time owners.
By the way, I don't know if you know this.
Good guys, good food.
Yeah. In Detroit.
Yeah, absolutely. Are we going to talk about Kaepernick or not?
Quickly, I want to admit, we talked about Boehner and those being complicit in marijuana now and cashing in.
You say complicit like it's a criminal act.
No, it isn't a criminal act. Just taking advantage of the changes. I know they're pretty legal what they're doing. The pro leagues were so anti-gambling with a wink and a nod for decades and decades. You know, the integrity of the game, and you suspend Horning and Jim Taylor and all. Was it Jim Taylor? Who was it? Horning and somebody else.
Horning and Alex Harris.
I'm going to give you a story as soon as you get through what you're trying to do.
But so now the pro leagues
somewhere Tuesday.
The pro leagues are so into it now. They want a 1% cut. They're going to provide all the analytics. It's like all these years they said no gambling, the integrity of the game. Meanwhile, Jimmy the Greek started putting point spreads on in the 70s, and they loved it because gambling has always been the backbone, that extra boost that these leagues have enjoyed.
And then who were the brothers that owned the Kansas City Football Club back then?
The Hunts.
The Hunts were the biggest gamblers in the history of the NFL. Mm-hmm. Nobody even close. And they started to hook players to come in and No one's ever been able to prove this, but they had and leaned on players to keep the score where it needed to be so they could win and cut the players in. And I can tell you some names that would blow your wig off.
Where'd you hear that? I didn't see that
now,
one.
Now can you
How about the best quarterbacks, four or five of them, the best quarterbacks in the NFL? Some great linemen who you may have mentioned already yet today were also a part of it. All these guys were taking down the money, and the Hunts were running it. The whole thing, the Hunts were running it.
All these guys, first of all, Denny, were making $20,000 a year.
That's right.
$30,000 a
year. Not the Hunts.
Now they're making millions of dollars a year.
Right.
Furthermore, the NFL has become a multi-gazillion dollar industry.
It is.
One hint of any point shaving or anybody throwing a game – that kills the proverbial goose that laid the golden egg.
Yes, it does.
That's why the NFL tries to absolutely police this. I bet they've got a staff of maybe, 150, 200 people, ex-FBI agents,
long-time
law enforcement personnel. They're out there looking at everything and anybody
in baseball
that might upset the apple cart.
A lot harder to fix a game because you guys make this much money.
I used to participate, believe it or not, in the preseason programs that they get, and I'd go around to major league clubs and talk to the kids about gambling. About what could happen, how it could happen. And
cautionary tale from somebody who was
easy to fall into it. It's really easy to fall into
it.
But the bottom line was, it was eye-opening because these kids were so ignorant to how it could happen, how quickly it could happen. You give a guy a $20 bill or he gives you a $20 bill, and all of a sudden you got a friend that you didn't want. And it's amazing how it's so damn easy. And, of course, it's, hey, can you loan me $1,000? Yeah, okay, I'll give you. And I'm talking about when we played, 60s, 70s, and you borrow $1,000 from a guy, $2,000. All of a sudden, you can't pay the $2,000 back, but he's got an idea for you how you can pay it back pretty quick.
Is that why you allegedly called in bets from the clubhouse and the writers would hear you?
That's BS. Never called a bet.
We were just a kid. You're just a kid anyway. I understand. 22.
All right, and I know, Denny, this is a long time ago.
Stupid.
It's a long, but I think you probably should address this since you broached the subject. True story. You owed a lot of money in a gambling debt to one of the mafia guys in Detroit. They stepped on your toe.
No,
and broken.
Well,
address the story then.
Address the story.
Not true.
What everybody knows.
What happened was
everybody's heard.
As far as the foot goes, I hurt the foot at the ballpark. I got my brains beat out one night. Kicked my foot real hard into my locker. Cut my foot and sprained it. And then I went home. You're going to love the end of the story. Then I went home and I'm pouting about how bad of a pitcher I was that night. And it's 1 o'clock in the morning. And what show came on at 1 o'clock in the morning here?
The Test Pattern.
No, The Untouchables.
Oh, okay.
All shows, The Untouchables come on. And I'm sitting there watching The Untouchables, almost going to sleep. And I hear something fall in the garage. I had a Newfoundland at the time. And this great big monster of Newfoundland knocked the garbage can over in the garbage. I thought somebody broke into the house. So I grab a bat. Meanwhile, I was laying on my left foot. The one that I had hurt, and it went numb because of my weight sitting on the foot. And as I got up, all of a sudden I felt something tear in my foot, and that's where the story came from. Pete Waldmeyer and his BS and all these other guys. And Dave Dials, remember Dave Dials? We all remember Dave Dials. Great guy. He and I wrote a couple of books together. But Dave Dials and I, Dave actually went and saw, because there were so many horrible stories, he went and saw the head of the Detroit Mafia. A guy by the name of Tony
Giacalone.
Tony Giacalone. In fact, when somebody asked me about Giacalone, I said, I don't know Mr. Aloney. That's his whole last name,
Giacalone.
Right, that's his last name. So they came to me, and Giacalone, Lord forbid, Giacalone said, listen, we don't know him. We know who he is. We know he plays ball, but he had nothing to do with us. Do you think we want Denny McClain's profile? Do you really think we want him with us?
All right. We don't want to litigate this one again. We take you at your word on that one.
Let me tell you something. This story, I've never heard this story in my life. I only heard about the mafia guy who stepped on your toe. You ruined your pitching arm as a result. We're going to make sure this story gets out for you, Denny. Whether it's apocryphal or not, we will. And at least you addressed the issue.
It's been told, said before. Anyway, the Aldo Eye Center is our sponsor here on this show. And I got LASIK surgery from Dr. Yaldo back in 2000. That's how long ago that was.
It still works.
It works amazingly. Well, until I got cataracts. It was amazing. I never thought if I got LASIK I would see better without my glasses than with them. I just thought it would free me from my glasses, which it does. But you're not looking through scratchy plastic, and you're not having distortion of, you know, the peripheral vision, etc. So that was a miracle in itself. Then, of course, you need reading glasses later on. That's an issue that we can also deal with LASIK surgery these days. And also then I got cataracts a few years ago and got multifocal lens implants. Now, you got one of them also, but you got the one that doesn't let you see near. So I got incredible close vision. I can read microscopic type because these multifocal lens implants are amazing.
So you're going to introduce me to Dr. Yeldo, so he'll do me too. Right?
Yes, I will. And if you can afford it, you can certainly get the surgery.
No, it's money.
But so perfect close vision, great far vision, and it lasts a lifetime. You'll never get cataracts. But, you know, what I can encourage people to do is just get an eye exam. You can have all kinds of things going on. Find out what can improve your vision if you can get rid of glasses and contacts. There are many options, and it's free because regular insurance covers an eye exam. And if you're thinking about any type of eye surgery, the evaluation is free. So just find out. It's a lifestyle thing. You just don't want to be bothered by ancient technologies like contacts and glass. So call 800-398-EYES, 800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Well, you wanted to talk about Kaepernick a little bit. We kind of got off the Super Bowl, but I guess the point being is that for a guy not playing, he has been pretty dominant in the discussion so far regarding the Super Bowl, the halftime show, and the fact that what Maroon 5 didn't go to a their news conference or something like that?
Yeah, Maroon 5 the league decided that they were not going to allow Maroon 5 to have a press conference before the game because they were afraid that Kaepernick's name would come up.
I need you guys to do me a favor. Will you wake me up, please, at 6 o'clock Sunday afternoon in time for kickoff? Just wake me up in time for kickoff.
I think it's 6:18 or 6:35.
Whatever it is.
And who's going to be the first guy to kneel during the national anthem?
The prop
bets. At the game
bets.
On Sunday, I don't think anybody will.
I don't think anybody in the world will kneel.
I don't think so.
I agree
with
you. I think that's behind us.
In fact, did you see what Gladys Knight said? I mean, I got to give her credit on this Kaepernick story. She's going to sing the national anthem. And she said, unfortunately, the anthem has been dragged into this debate. The fight for justice should stand alone, which Kaepernick has done for, you know, racial injustice. And the anthem should be left out of it, which is true. It was other people, most notably our president, who made it about the national anthem. The protest wasn't about the military. It wasn't about it was just about that one issue. So, yeah, it has gotten a little out of hand. And Kaepernick has become, I shouldn't say a little out of hand, it's become an issue that cost the NFL great public relations.
You can take that a step farther, too, if you want to. We only started doing this, I think the year was 54 during the Eisenhower administration. I don't really know what the thinking was at the time because the wars were over. I don't know why we do it now. Why do we have to play the national anthem before every sports event? We are all patriotic Americans. We all love our country. That goes without saying. It's becoming a divisive force, actually. So let's just play the game, okay?
Well, one reason that it's a prop bet, you can bet how long the anthem will last if it's over or under a minute. So I think we need to have it because it helps gambling. But no, I agree. It was instituted in World War I to support in
at sports events.
Yes, it was the first time the anthem was played was the 19-teens. It was a Yankee game, and it kind of I think it went away for a long time.
It did.
It was brought back at some other time. So I mean, it's an arbitrary thing. You know why we need the anthem, but you know it's hard to argue against it because
you
sound unpatriotic.
Two other things. Kaepernick is whatever it's going to happen, but what I have a problem with Kaepernick not getting an offer from somebody. They're making a real big mistake there because he's going to wind up with a whole bunch of loot by the time this thing is all over with.
The grievance,
he goes through court. Here's a guy with 72 touchdown passes and only 30 interceptions in his career, and this guy can't get a job offer.
He can play for somebody.
He may not
have become the quarterback a lot of us thought he was going to become. I know a couple guys, and I bet you've heard of them, Jack Morris and Lance Parrish, just to name two, who made a lot of money when Major League Baseball owners colluded not to sign free agents that one year. They sued and, as I said, you know, did very well for themselves. And you're right, Denny, Kaepernick's going to make a lot of money.
A ton. And he's got one, and I can't think of the guy's name right offhand. He's got one of the great attorneys in the country, too.
Oh, yeah, Garagos.
Garagos.
Didn't he defend Michael Jackson, I think? He
defended Michael Jackson, yeah. too. But he's got Garagos, and Garagos is not going to lose this one. This one, I think even Helen Keller could win this one.
It's interesting. 77% of blacks and 59% of whites agree that he is being penalized for his stance.
Who are the 23% of African Americans who do not agree with that statement? Could we see a show of hands out there, please?
Maybe Gladys Knight is one of them. But anyway.
And don't be anybody. We're not going to have any big celebration for what I'm about to say. But 19 years ago today, 19 years ago this week, Ray Lewis, that great quarterback, that great human being with the Baltimore football team.
He was a linebacker, right?
He was a middle linebacker.
Was indicted for killing two people, decided to plead guilty to obstruction of justice, and joined the prosecution team and never spent 1 hour in jail.
Right.
Well, Jenny, now
two people died.
Our system of jurisprudence in this country. Yeah. He didn't actually kill the people, but they get people to flip all the time to testify in return for immunity.
Listen. According
he
to,
was there. We just know he was there, and he had there. Blood on his suit, I think.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask both of you. Who killed him? Who killed these two guys?
Well, I don't know.
Guess what? All four guys were acquitted. So somebody had to kill two guys. He didn't die from natural causes. Two knives are in their back.
We ain't got enough time to talk about injustice in our system of jurisprudence.
Speaking of injustice, 100th anniversary today. We're recording the show on Thursday, January 31st. Jackie Robinson was born 100 years ago today, and his wife,
Jack Roosevelt Robinson.
He died. In fact, he died when he was 53 years old. He was a serious diabetic, so it's almost half of his life, he's been gone almost as long as he lived. But his wife, Rachel, who was in all the movies and the Jackie Robinson story and all that, she's 96, and the two of them are the only husband and wife enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
Is that right?
She got a citizenship award a couple of years ago. So
Wait a minute. Rachel Robinson is a very gracious lady.
Mm-hmm. Very nice lady.
She's a wonderful person. Yeah. Why on earth is she enshrined in the Baseball
because
Hall of
Fame? Because there was an award she got. I forget what it was.
Doesn't have a plaque, a citizenship.
It's just a footnote. You're right. She doesn't belong in there as anybody who hit home runs.
You misspoke, in other words. All right.
But she is in there. She's recognized in there. The only husband and wife. Okay. I spoke the truth. It may have not been quite because, you know.
And I'll tell you something
else. She didn't hit 300 like Jackie, who had a lifetime average of 311.
I'll bet you something else. I bet she's got a plaque, too. We'll be in Cooperstown this summer. We'll check it out. How's that?
You'll go by yourself. They've ruined the Hall of Fame to the extent that I'll never go again.
Why have they ruined the Hall of Fame?
Because of the steroid boys?
Whether it's the steroid boys, whether it's the Veterans Committee,
whether it's this new Veterans Committee,
right. The Hall of Fame is the Hall of the Very Good. It's not the Hall of the Great.
All Halls of Fame are arbitrary because there's no baseline.
I guess you made three good points.
Among myriad others in the short course of this program.
Well,
Dennis,
let me tell you something. It's one of the great, great, great places to visit.
No matter
what you think.
Oh, Cooperstown's an amazing little
town. It is just amazing. People, if you haven't gone, you got to go. I mean, that's how I've been going now for, I think it's like 14 or 15 years in a row. And we have a ball up there.
You and Pete Rose have those little side-by-side kiosks, right? Well, where you're signing autographs and giving away pictures to people, you and Pete next to each other?
It's a little bit better than that, but us and about 200 other guys.
So I was in Cooperstown with Denny in maybe 2006, and there's crowds going up and down, and guys having in booths. And back next to us in our booth was Bill Lee, who's
a
total character. But in any case, Rose comes walking down the street. Denny runs out, you know, they're chit-chatting. And Denny goes, so Pete, what are you doing these days? And Pete says, I just play Pete Rose every day, which
that's
means
what Denny McClain does.
I sign autographs.
That's what Tom Seaver does.
I shake
that's
hands.
That's what Johnny Bench
right.
does. That's what all these guys do. They just play themselves every day.
Which is really an easy role to play.
That got the late Willie McCovey and the late Duke Snider in trouble. You can be Denny McClain every day of your life and play it, but you got to pay taxes on it. And that's what those two guys didn't get.
I didn't know that about Willie McCovey. I remember when Willie McCovey, I don't want to sound old.
I got a story on Willie, too.
He comes up in 1959, and I'm away with my parents in the summer, and I'm really becoming a baseball freak. The first day in the major leagues, two singles and two triples. And I said, who is this guy? Wow. Imagine a rookie in his first game. So Willie McCovey.
I got to pitch in the 69 All-Star game. It was the third appearance of my career. And
in the All-Star game.
And that was the game I was late for. I had a dentist appointment in the morning. And got there just in time for the fourth or fifth inning. Stottlemyre had started the game, got his brains
Everybody
beat out.
Everybody knows that story.
You don't know the story. And lo and behold, the last thing Mayo Smith says to me before I go out, he says, listen, just to keep the game moving along, don't throw McCovey any changeups. I said, are you kidding? I got the best changeup in America. He says, don't throw him one. That's all I'm telling you. Please don't. Now, you know, I get him 0-2, and I throw him, and I never, ever pitch this way. I never throw a changeup when I'm ahead of a hitter. It's a stupid, stupid thing to do. But I figured, hey, this is the All-Star game. I'm going to fool the hell out of this guy. I throw him a changeup. The ball's about this far outside. He hits – the ball's still going to end the story.
Sure.
The guy hit the ball so far and so quick. I never saw a ball get out of a ballpark that quick before in my life.
Okay, fellas, now I'm going to test your knowledge here. There was another great right-handed pitcher of your era who could not ever get Willie McCovey out. McCovey owned him. Who was that pitcher?
Gibson.
Don Drysdale.
Oh, okay.
Or Drysdale.
Never get McCovey out.
Well, he was a sidearming right-hander, and McCovey was a lefty, so that probably helped a little bit.
Well, still, but you would think at some point, you know, that he'd have some success against him.
Yeah, he hit Gibson pretty well, too.
You know, Danny, I will never forget one of my – I won't say childhood because I was a youth, a teen by then. I will never forget watching you. I think it was in your first All-Star appearance. You faced nine guys in the National League squad, including Mays and Aaron. Yeah. And you just had those guys, I mean, you eaten out of your hand. You struck out, I think
what
it
year was,
was it Mays, 66, I think? Mays, you struck out on an overhand curveball, starts out at his shoulders, and at the last second, just drops right down, strike three called, and he's out. It was a masterful performance. I've never forgotten that somehow watching
that. I appreciate that. I'll never forget pitching to Willie Mays in an All-Star game. Get him 3-2. I had him 0-2 and then started farting in my pants because I was scared to death. What do I do now to him? And then we get him 3-2 and freehand put down a sign for a curveball. And I'm thinking, what the hell is he thinking about? This is an All-Star game. Why would we waste this pitch? And I threw one of those curveballs, just one of those moments, you know, one of the good moments.
That's
that you have
the pitch that I remember so well.
He took it. He didn't even swing at the ball. That's how bad it fooled him. But, yeah, we struck him out. But, you know, the best part about that story is eight of the starters for that ball club all wound up in the Hall of Fame.
No kidding. It must have been Aaron.
You mowed them down like they weren't even up there, like they were triple-A guys.
This is 1966.
Another a guy we all know very well and just a tremendous guy, former major league pitcher for a long time, Bob Miller, the ex-University of Detroit head baseball coach.
Nice,
I was over at Bob's house about 2 years ago. We're talking about the kind of stuff we're talking about. I said, all the years you pitched for the Phillies, how did you do against Mays and Aaron? He said, I just never had any problem with those guys for whatever reason. The one guy, Bob Miller, could never get out. He owned him. D. Fondi.
Oh, my God, with the Cubs.
Go figure. You just don't know. Danny, you're in the same situation. I'm sure that certain guys didn't give you any trouble who were major stars, and there may have been, you know, two or three second-rate major league players, banjo hitters, who just had great success against you.
You know who hit 500 against me? You're not going to believe
it. You said it before. No.
Gene Michaels.
Gene Michaels.
Gene Michaels' career was about 180. He hit 500 off me. And you know how I found out about it? I was inducted, believe it or not, into the Ted Williams Hall of Fame. And Gene Michaels was there. And Gene read all the stats. He said, oh, by the way, I have to read you my stats, too. And I'm standing there, and I whispered to him. I said, what the hell are you talking about? And he said, listen to the numbers. He was 18 or 28 for 55 or 56. It was embarrassing to have Gene Michaels. And, of course, 7 months later, the poor guy died.
His name was Gene Michael.
I loved Sick. I knew Sick very well. I covered him. He was general manager
what a
of the
poker
Yankees.
Player. Hey,
so they were having some kind of Yankee golf outing in New York years ago. That'll be fun. I'll get a little camera crew, go over there, do some stuff. So Sick's coming off the 18th hole, and his playing partner that day, among others, had been Yogi Berra. Now, Sick's got such great personality. I'll stick a mic in
front.
I said, Sick, so, you know, you're a big, big golfer, I know, and it's such a difficult game to play. What's harder, hitting a golf ball the way you guys do now, or facing major league pitching? He said, I'll tell you what, if that little white golf ball were coming at you and then falling off a table at the last second or swerving outside the plate by 10 inches at the last second, then, you know, it would be golf. It would be much harder. But there's nothing harder than hitting a pitch baseball.
On that note, good show, gentlemen. Enjoyed it. And we'll see you all next time for No Filter.
Bob, keep working on your tan, buddy.